Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. Join us on our journey into the past, the present, and the future as we explore the relationship between technology and humanity. Together, we are going to find out what it means to live in a society where everything is connected and the only constant is change. Knowledge is power, now more than ever. Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at imperva.com. Nintex is the global standard for business process management and automation. The Nintex platform helps their clients accelerate progress on their digital transformation journeys by quickly and easily managing, automating, and optimizing business processes. Learn more at nintex.com.
Here we are. We are on another Redefining Security podcast here on ITSP Magazine. And as the name of the channel suggests, we're looking to change the way we think and approach cybersecurity. And the market's been trying to get us to do this with marketing lingo slung all over the place. And we're gonna dig into this particular topic, something we've talked about before, and possibly have had some positive views on this particular topic. And I doubt we're gonna stay high and mighty and very positive on this one. I think we're gonna get into the meat of it. And we're talking about zero trust. And what the heck is that? Why does it matter? How do you deal with your cybersecurity program with zero trust in mind, or do you toss it to the side? So, good guy joining us. He was on the show previously, Marcus Ranum. Good to see you. Good to hear you. How are things?
Things are good. Snowing like crazy up here.
Snowing. Nice. And you introduced us to a new guest, Ron Dilley. Ron, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's really cold here on the West Coast. I think it was like 62 degrees. I know. I had to wear a jacket when I left the house today, so.
It's unnatural for LA, that's for sure. We're both LA based. Well, listen, quick few words from you, Marcus, for those who don't know you, and then I'll pass it to Ron for the same.
Okay, so the idea of zero trust is interesting, and it's gotten a lot of traction. It sort of ties to the idea of software-defined networking, because in a sense, the two things are connected at the hip in the same way that classical firewalls with zone networks is tied to VLAN trunking setups. And that's really kind of the issue. The problem I see with the zero trust model is that in the beginning, we used firewalls to define two very simple entities, us versus them. And then we started migrating to us versus them, plus our business partners, and we had a much more complicated rule set, which you can turn into a matrix of what connectivity is allowed and what's not allowed. But just managing the number of entities that we had with basic zones becomes difficult. And so the first problem I think we've got with a zero trust model is you're basically multiplying it so that the number of rules that you potentially have running is equal to the number of entities that you've got on your network. And that gets to be a serious management problem. If an organization is having trouble building a VLAN zoned network, I don't see why they're going to be happy building a network where essentially you've got different rules for each entity. So what really happens is that they boil down and they come up with packages of rules that they apply to groups of entities, which means that you've basically just re-implemented VLANs with zones, because you're saying these members of these entities can talk to each other and these members of these entities can talk to each other. So what I think I'm saying is the model of each machine being an isolated system that protects itself doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense in an environment where the bottleneck is the human security administrator's ability to manage the cross product of all the entities that they've already got. So that's one point. The other point is the model of zero trust is that we're not relying on things that we don't own and things that we don't control. But that's just farcical in an environment where our entire software model is trusting all kinds of things all over the place. And, you know, I could say SolarWinds, for example, is a perfect example of why zero trust is kind of barking up the wrong tree, right? If you're trusting, you're going to trust Microsoft, you're going to trust all of your software providers. And that's really the biggest exposure. Trying to build a complex matrix of all the different entities on your network is an interesting effort, but I just think it's largely wasted.
Nice. Great way to frame it. And Ron, a little
bit. I'm glad that I'm only a security curmudgeon in training. I haven't graduated to full-fledged curmudgeon yet. So I think I'm not as pessimistic about zero trust. At least, I guess first we should say, define zero trust, because it seems like there's 1,000 or more different perspectives on what zero trust is. If we're talking about zero trust, the fundamental assertion that you're not going to use anything unless it's consistently provably trusted, I think that's a great idea. It's something that Marcus and I have been wanting forever. I think I heard years ago, Marcus, maybe 10, 15 years ago, making the argument that we should get rid of general use computers and move to consoles for everything. That way we could at least have a chance of asserting trust in a system, but impractical, obviously. So what are we talking about when we say zero trust? I guess I'd like to start with that before we start shooting holes in it.
Well, so the model that I've heard is we don't trust the network. You know, we minimize the amount to which we have to trust the network. So we're going to have all of the entities on our network are going to talk to spokes, kind of in a hub and spoke model of software, where you've got packages of core services, and we say, we're going to let communication happen to our DNS server and to our file server, but we're not going to allow cross-system file browsing and stuff like that. So it looks kind of like a distributed firewall model, where each endpoint is essentially responsible for running a firewall, but they're all responsible for running under a common policy, which is pushed to them from a trusted console. Which is that by the way, is another problem with the whole zero trust model, is you've got this trusted console, which is got the great big glaring target of the whole scenario.
Yeah, well, agreed. I would go so far as to say, if we say that zero trust is that everything must be verified explicitly, all components, all layers, not just the network, although I agree that many people come and talk to me about zero trust and they're really talking about network segmentation. I would also go so far as to say the least privilege is mandatory. And all decisions, all architecture, all implementation has to assume the breach already exists, and that the trusted systems are resilient against the breach. And I love those things. If we had an environment that had those three things in all components, right? Identity, devices, applications, data, infrastructure, networks, all of it, and it was explicitly verified, and it had least privilege, and it was resilient even in the face of a direct breach, you and I wouldn't have jobs anymore. We could actually retire as curmudgeons or in training curmudgeons. But I agree with you. I think it's less feasible than implementing non-general use computers.
Well,
is that the main point that assume compromised? Is that really?
No, assume a breach. So in the face of a layer being breached, it's still verified trusted.
Yeah. See,
so own the network, and the network is still trusted.
Yeah, see, I'm arguing that we don't even get to the point where it gets that good, because humans aren't going to do a good enough job of managing all the entity relationships that precisely in that kind of environment. The thing that makes sense, if you're going to say we have some kind of a zero trust environment with some kind of a management plane, because we're going to have a management plane for something like that, is what we're going to do is we're going to break things down and we're going to come up with service packages. And we're going to say these machines can talk to this set of services and these machines can talk to that set of services. And what I've just done is built a zoned network. And as you know, I'm a massive fan of zoned networks and devising our software, our security based on the software services that we want to run in and out of different zones. My observation is that security practitioners have a hell of a time even building a decent zoned network with a decent software service model. So giving them something where you're basically dealing with point-to-point software service models, it just blows up their ability to keep track of things.
Yeah, look, to paraphrase, and just check me, make sure I'm hearing you right. If people are struggling to understand what applications they have on the wire, let alone what services the application used to connect to other things, let alone manage a marginally segmented network and the firewall rules necessary to allow that traffic, then how could they possibly do more? Then I agree completely. I can't tell you the number of times people have come and said, hey, I really want to implement zero trust because, you know, this network segmentation stuff is really hard. So I think we should do micro segmentation and software-defined networking. That should be a lot easier.
Well, yeah, the software-defined
kind of takes the breath away.
Yeah. Well, you heard me gasp. The software-defined networking aspect of this is kind of what turned me on to this whole view that I have of zero trust. I was talking to one organization that was going to switch to SDN, and I said, why on earth would you want to do your networking in software? It's just one more thing for you to be bad at. People are terrible at writing software. It's already bad enough to build networks the way that you build them now with VLANs, and you're going to tell me that you're going to have your network engineers writing code? What? And that sort of got me thinking about this, because really the relationship here is we have most of the things that we need to build a sort of zero trust thing, which would be you configure all of your switches to not allow cross-port traffic, force everything through some kind of a nice layer 7 firewall, and then start applying service packages and a zone model on top of it. You could call that zero trust. Let me be frank. I think a lot of what's going on with the whole zero trust thrust is there's some companies whose marketing departments have decided that they're going to push zero trust. And they got some people to write some papers pushing zero trust. And those people who wrote those papers have probably never built a significant network larger than a homeland. Because if you're really talking about a network like I know you run, Ron, you can't manage that at a detailed entity level. The only way to keep from losing your mind is to zone things. That's the whole point of zoning things, is to allow you to rationally reason about clusters of entities, and that's the only way that we can do it. So I think somewhere between the old school firewall model of that there's two entities, us and them, and the zero trust model where there's every single entity on the network is individually configurable, I think that there's a happy medium, and that's trying to organize your network into zones that you can hold within your brain and make some sense of.
Yeah, well, Marcus, you know that I'm a huge fan of segmentation, and I like extra stuff too, but segmentation at the core is really, really clear and definitive as a control. I think that as more and more protocols become encrypted, it becomes more complicated. As more and more applications overload, you know, single ports with all kinds of very powerful and therefore dangerous interfaces, network segmentation becomes more difficult. I agree with you. Just going to control planes for a second, I don't know of anyone who has implemented an effective control plane that can manage all of the different kinds of control systems from a single pane of glass, right? The operating system, the patches, the applications, the data, the network layer, the firewalls, the load balancers, the routers, all the different brands, all the different software versions. I don't know of a tool that can do that in a single pane of glass, but I think there are some implementations, you know, virtualization implementations, cloud implementations, where conceivably it would be possible to implement a control plane that was universal and functioned for all of the control capabilities, at least within that environment, within that virtual environment or within that cloud environment.
Right. Well, we're
but having it hybrid, I don't know how that's going to work.
Well, we're going to have.
It seems daunting.
We're going to have the number of control planes boil down to something fairly small. If people want to do software-defined networking, that's going to have to happen. And what I generally would predict there is it's going to boil down to whatever Cisco gives you plus whatever VMware gives you, and the two aren't going to work together because why should they? So,
and what I'm wondering is, and this may be an ignorant question, as many of these might be as we have this conversation for me, because I'm not a hands-on network admin. I get enough of it to be dangerous. But is there, because you said it's a spectrum between us versus them and then every entity. And is it a spectrum or is it a hybrid? That's kind of what I'm wondering. Are there instances where we can take a chunk, and I don't know if that's chunk of network or chunk of business process or chunk of tech stack or chunk of whatever, and make that zero trust in amongst everything else? Or is it a spectrum of zero trust across everything, and that's the only way to go about it? So I don't know if that's a good question or not, but
no,
one of the things I'm thinking.
I think that's a great question. What's going to wind up happening is you're going to have some networks where maybe you do want to try to do every entity for itself. Although the way that would be implemented, I would assume would be you would just plug all your devices into a switch and then say, tell the switch there's no crosstalk between the devices, and then have a standard firewall policy in kernel firewall on each of the endpoints that implements some kind of a standard policy. And then you have a pretty good start. But the problem is they're still going to be downloading all their updates from Microsoft and SolarWinds.
It doesn't stop the watering hole problem, right?
Yeah.
So because the victims can't talk to each other doesn't mean that they can't be infected or attacked, right? Right. By upstream. Right, or your example, right, by a patching mechanism.
And that's really the issue here, because we're talking about something extremely, extremely expensive to build, a zero trust network, and to manage it, to define the entity relationships for all the entities, or to use some software package that defines it for you, in which case you're trusting that software package. It becomes kind of a dynamic firewall management plane, rule writer thingamajig. And that would be cool to have if it existed. But what I'm guessing would happen if you had that is you'd wind up building a zoned network out of your zero trust tool. And that would be cool because I'm a big fan of zoned networks, right? You'd say, apply this rule set to all of my desktops, apply this rule set to all of my servers. But I just built a zoned network, but I can call it zero trust and I can buy that product from a zero trust product vendor.
Understood, but just please excuse me being the devil's advocate. To go back to this fundamental of what zero trust is, it's more than just the network, right? It's how do you provide assurance that the operating system and the firmware below the operating system is trusted? Because if you can't trust those two things, right, fundamentally even a physical network, let alone a virtual network on top of the physical network, how can that be trusted if you can't trust the operating system or the firmware below it? Same thing with the network gear, right? So
is it
zero trust? Go ahead.
Sorry, I'm wondering, are we trying to protect the system from itself, from other things, protect other systems from it, to reduce the exposure, to respond more quickly? Is it all of that, or is there one thing that it's really going to help with?
Well, it's everything from everything.
Yeah, go ahead.
And
it's an implicit trust.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just implicit trust. If you can't prove it's trusted, you can't trust it, and therefore you can't rely on it to process, transmit, or store data. Right. So the majority of the discussion we're having now is talking about zero trust as it relates to the network, which is a much smaller problem to solve. And I agree with Marcus. Even at that smaller definition, it seems like a daunting task. Every conversation I've had with people about zero trust and that they desperately need help starts with, we don't have segmentation and we want to put in segmentation. We implemented segmentation, but it caused a whole bunch of problems. Executive management is uncomfortable with implementing zero trust, right? All of these different companies fundamentally are struggling with implementing or enhancing their current network segmentation strategies. And as Marcus said, somebody has told them that zero trust is the easy way to do it. And I scratch my head trying to understand how that could possibly be the case.
And I can also recall when Ron was present at me doing an arm waving, eyeballs bugged out, shouting session at a Usenix at, I think it was in Boston, about virtual machines. And the whole idea of virtual machines essentially being that you're on a common bus, whether you want to admit it to yourself or not, and someone is going to be able to break into the host and then break into all of the clients through the host. And at that time, everybody was saying, oh, no, that will never happen. But now, I don't know how many VMware host breaches later, I think we can put that idea to sleep, right? So we can't even trust the isolation in our VMware rack. Of course you're trusting the host and the VM rack. And if you can't trust the host and the VM rack because there's vulnerabilities that allow somebody to access the clients through the host, then we don't need to argue about all of the networking stuff that could be going on between that. You get into the host and you control the hard drives of the clients. You control everything. So I think really what I'm saying is two things: that human security and network administrators have trouble managing the tools that we've already given them, which are excellent tools if used thoroughly and correctly. They're having trouble with that, and now they're asking for something that's offers orders of magnitude more complexity. And that is a problem because complexity is the issue. And I've talked to customers who want to do this kind of stuff. And my usual, I try to be productive. And I usually say, well, how has your zoning process gone? Breaking your network into different zones. And they say, well, we haven't been able to switch over to that because we're worried about things not working. Well, then you certainly can't do zero trust. And you're not going to be able to do software-defined networking either. So why don't you get to...
That's the thing that's coming to mind. The ultimate fail safe, right? Where things just stop and business gets crushed potentially.
Yeah, and any control that stops the business is simply removed, right? And the managers or executives that are responsible for making those decisions are removed, right? So and new people that will not make that silly decision again are put in place. But so I mean obviously, Marcus, I'm going to challenge you to how do we make this work, but before I go there, so I'll give you a couple minutes to percolate on that. So I've looked at a lot of these companies that are selling zero trust, and part of their pitch appears to be buy our solution and we will automatically, dynamically choose for you the micro-segmentation policies, not just for the network, but also for processes. It'll happen all dynamically. We'll go into learning mode and then the controls will be implemented. And of course you can review those recommendations yourself, and everything is done in a single control plane and no detailed understanding of how applications work or how they communicate with each other or the interfaces or the data flows is required. The software handles that all by itself. And that's what they're packaging is zero trust.
Well, that sounds great.
I find that disturbing.
Magic.
It's amazing, right?
Well, so, if you remember Paul Robertson, but he was doing stuff back when PCI networks first started to come along. And what he would do is put a sniffer on the network and he would look at the traffic and he would map it. And then he would basically match that against an application list and build up a list of entity relationships. And then he would just program that into the firewall. So you had a month in which you could review which machines talked to what machines for doing what. And then you sat down and you did the hard work and you drank the coffee and you stared at the listings. And then you wrote a script that would write a whole bunch of rules that got stuck in the switch. you know, that works. And I suppose you can do that. The question then becomes, how do you manage and authorize that? Because you treat this dynamic thing. Where's your specification, right? Because your specification of what's allowed and what's not allowed is going to begin to shift and twist and change as new malware gets introduced to your system, or new video chat applications or whatever. You're going to be right back where we were in the intrusion detection days, chasing down applications and trying to figure, what the heck is that running on this port? Oh, well, it's encrypted. I have no freaking idea. Let's just let it through because it might be being used by this business unit, right? And if we're going to do that, we may as well just build zoned architectures. And of course, I'm biased. I love me some zoned architectures. I mean, I think the main point is, if we have a network and we define five zones, for example, now all I have to do is figure out what are the service packages that I'm going to allow back and forth between those five zones. And that's a hard challenge just to implement that. I could imagine a dynamic tool that would build those zones. It's called, you know, a firewall that has permit outbound turned on for pretty much everything, and then some layer 7 inbound permit. You could build that, but that would be hard. And I see a lot of businesses that try to build that, and they spend 5 or 6 years sometimes, and they still fail. So, I mean, this all ties in also to the idea of software-defined networking, which is a very attractive seeming concept. But I've had to explain to some people that software-defined networking doesn't mean you can just say, well, turn the bandwidth up to 11. You're going to have to know where you're turning the bandwidth up to 11 from and to, which means you have to know what things are important on your network. And you're right back into building a zoned architecture where you're saying, make the bandwidth fast between here and here. And I would actually say, if you don't have the ability to roughly categorize what systems on your network do what, you don't have a network that you can secure. You just have an open swamp. You may as well just replace the whole thing with a switch and turn it up to 11.
So again, agree. But because I'm only a curmudgeon in training, I'm trying to get smarter on this. So if this is all for naught, what can we do? And my impassioned plea really is argued that, you know, years ago when I was doing firewalls back in the day, when I wasn't a curmudgeon, even in training, you had to have a detailed understanding of the ports and protocols and direction and the systems involved, you know, IP addresses, to be able to create ACLs. And I remember when the big firewall manufacturers started including layer 7, and then they started allowing you to have application-based rules along with port and protocol-based rules, I really didn't like it. I thought that it was dummying down the interface. It was making it easy to hide really crazy things in the configurations. And in general, I was resistant to it. I'll admit it. I was resistant to it. But in the last few years, I've been in some firewalls working on rule sets. And you know something? It's really nice and convenient and reasonably secure to be able to say, I want this Windows machine to talk to that Windows machine, and not have to specify the 16 ports and the ephemeral ports necessary to make that specific Microsoft protocol work. That's nice. That is made security better. So is it possible that the zero trust or some iteration in the future, right, can be the same, that it can move us to a better position from a security perspective? And look, some big companies have implemented zero trust. I would argue big companies that have really, really talented people, and they have a lot of control over the full stack that they're using, the identities, the devices, the applications, the data, the infrastructure, and the networks that they're using. So having a true zero trust implementation where they verify explicitly, use or enforce least privilege absolutely, and assume everything is breached, they can do that. But I think the vast majority of companies would struggle. So with all of that context, Marcus, you're the big brain. How do we make this work?
Well,
how do you make zero trust work?
Well, I've been saying this since my first paper on firewalls, which was, 97 or something like that, was that you may sometimes need to identify an endpoint and say, this endpoint is important and it has to be able to defend itself, period, right? Which means that you've got, you know, some machine with an in-kernel firewall and layer 7 servers, layer 7 services, and layer 7 clients that are less vulnerable than complete garbage. And we've migrated to a point where you've got some of that. I mean, you can get that with AWS and other cloud services where the endpoint does have a security model so that you can build zones and you can build security models for the endpoints. And I think that's great. I think if we're going to spend our effort as a community, it would be more effective to begin to insist that the IP addresses of patch servers for certain critical software and operating systems, that those IP addresses be fixed so that we can build those into our trust model, because we are trusting them, but we're just trusting DNS on top of that. We're trusting that nobody can fool us for where update.whatever.com is. I think that being able to specify fixed IPs for update sites would have more bang for the buck for everybody than to keep trying to chase these moving targets. And then the other thing would be, it would be great if we had a core service package that was the basic things that a system is expected to do. And I had the ability in a firewall or a switch to say, this is a Windows machine and it needs to do basic Windows stuff. And basic Windows stuff means, you know, get to update and do a few things outbound and otherwise not be incredibly stupid. What we need is we need a mechanism where the system more or less behaves in a safe manner until you screw it up. And then you identify, put a red flag on the, you're about to screw this system up. I think that would work. Or it would certainly help, but we don't even have that. We're still chasing application lists and trying to decide, is Zoom okay, or is Google Chat okay, or are they both okay? Which are we going to trust? And the answer there is, I don't know. Neither does anybody else, right? Right now, because there is no good mechanism for fixing trust on operating system updates, every significant application stack does its own updates. And that really ruins our ability to trust things. I don't have a great answer to that. I mean, the obvious answer is don't do that. But you know.
Well, I was just going to say, it seems that we're putting trust on something where we routinely see that those things aren't trustworthy.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it violates that verify explicitly. So, right, zero trust. If you're going to do zero trust, you need to explicitly verify all components at all levels, which includes the examples that Marcus just said, like patching, right? So all of the DNS, right? All of the components. And if you are not willing or able to do that, then probably what you're implementing is something less than zero trust. Right. Or you've bought into, right, what a company has sold you. So
the other one that I love about that is when you start looking at software-defined networking, I don't know what the current state of that particular software stack looks like, but when I first looked at software-defined networking, they were using management plane protocols that, if you read the specifications, it said security is not a consideration in this version of the specification, right? So you're saying we're going to do software-defined networking using something that is not even as good as duct tape. Let's not worry about that too much. But that's really the problem. The first people I encountered who wanted to do zero trust were saying, we're building our system so that they don't have to trust the network. And I would just hit them upside the head and say, DNS, ARP. And if they didn't, cringe and crawl out of the room, humiliation, I knew I was talking to someone who didn't know anything about networking. But that's really the problem. We have protocols that are fundamentally just not reliable enough, and we have tools that just aren't reliable enough. I mean, you can't sit there and say you're going to do endpoint trust, and then you've got things running in a VM rack. You're trusting VMware. That's fine. There's never been a problem with that. And that's really the issue. All of the tools and techniques that we have. Let me break that up. We have tools and we have techniques. None of the tools that we have are trustworthy, and all of the techniques that we have are awkward, time-consuming, and brain-busting. So that's a deadly combination.
And then you have people define processes and people running them.
Yeah. And so, I think that the organizations that want to do this, if they haven't been able to accomplish a reasonable zone model, they're not going to accomplish zero trust. They're going to accomplish a dynamic zone model using some kind of piece of software that infers the zones using some kind of artificial intelligence, neural network, gaba gaba woo, which is great. And that'll work. But by work, what I mean is that the vendors that sell that will be very happy.
So I presume it's two things, right? One, secure the business, but two, don't crush the SecOps team in the process.
Right.
So is there a path to increase the level of security and not increase the burden on SecOps? I don't know, maybe Ron, if you have some thoughts on that.
Can I answer that one, Ron?
So, well, you can answer it. I think your answer will be the same. There's no free lunch, right? There's just no free lunch. It's like the idea that the cloud means you don't have to have admins, right?
Right.
So, of course, if you increase your attack surface, you need to increase your ability, capability, and resources to monitor and respond to threats against your attack surface. Of course, there's no free lunch.
Right.
Zero trust. Look, I would love to be in a world of real zero trust, because a patching problem or a DNS problem couldn't happen in a world of real zero trust, because the services and protocols wouldn't be allowed to operate within the sphere of zero trust. So that would be great. I think it's wholly impractical. I was going to ask,
will there ever be a possibility for that?
Let's imagine
an interesting question. Go ahead, Marcus. Go ahead.
Let's imagine that scenario. In the environment that Ron was just starting to describe, it would mean that nothing new would work automatically. Right?
Correct.
No new thing would just work. So when some new file sharing thing comes along and I try to use it, it won't work. Somebody in the security team has to go, I'm going to allow that to work for Marcus. And if we're doing it on a per node basis, then literally that decision has to be made for Marcus. But what we would have with a classic firewall or Gen 2 firewall model would be, we would say we're going to allow that for everybody. But still, somebody has to reach over and make it work. And that requires some brain power, because if the software just allows it to work, how does the software tell the difference between malware and my new favorite app? And that's really the problem. There's another aspect which we've been dancing around, which is the administrator. I've been attacking this problem on this from the angle of that everything is crap and none of it works particularly well, which I think is a proven point at this point. But the other issue is, what about the administrators? One of the premises of a no-trust model is that you're not trusting the administrators. There's a book I'd like to plug by Olaf Lyne, L-Y-S-N-E, called The Huawei and Snowden Questions, which essentially obliterates, it's a very academic book, but it basically obliterates computer security by pointing out that you're either trusting the vendor of your product who offers you a device or a software device that you have no visibility into and that you cannot fix if something goes wrong with it, or you're trusting your administrator, who is a person who could be Edward Snowden, or who could be an NSA agent, or who could be a Chinese PLA agent, or whoever. And so what Line points out is kind of where I'm coming from, which if you take the cross product of those two, you can't trust this. There is no trust in computer security that's worth even talking about. So what we're really doing is we're stuck with, you know, basic firewalls. And I think a security committee that meets and decides what are the core services that we're going to allow between which zones. And you build a service map and you build a zone map. And, you know, some discipline is required. I think the real issue is with the idea of a dynamic zero trust execution system is that there's no discipline or no thought required. There's no way that's going to work. Somebody who knows something about security has to apply knowledge to decide whether the policy makes sense. And I don't know any way that that policy can be inferred because we don't know what it is.
Is it possible to have some rules, some requirements, dependencies that must be met or tested before moving forward with zero trust? For example, if you don't have an inventory of the devices on your network, of the applications in your environment, and of your data that is 90%+ accurate at any given time, then work on that before you do zero trust. I'm just throwing it out there. If you don't have fundamental network segmentation, the dirty network, the DMZs, the server nets, your security nets, because it's too hard or for whatever reason, then you should focus on that before you try for zero trust. Are there a set of rules, right, that just sound right?
Well, I would say what you just described is if you don't have an asset inventory and a zone map, you're not tall enough to talk about zero trust. That's straight off the bat.
Don't ride the thread.
And then the other piece that I would throw in, if you're not doing operating system level configuration management for your significant platforms, then you're not tall enough to talk about zero trust. Or more importantly, do that first, because that's going to pay off better, right? Because if you're doing your own configuration management, then you've got the ability to actually build something fairly close to a zero trust model by using your CM tools to push out firewall rules to the endpoints. And you could build your own fairly effective zero trust zones in the network by just placing them under CM and then deciding who can talk to what for what. It would still be a group management plane, but I think that would be pretty good. If an organization can't do configuration management, and then the other piece of it, and I'm not a great fan of it, but if you do a vulnerability scan and you come back with 30,000 critical vulnerabilities on your network, you're not tall enough to do zero trust. Because, you know, if I've got 30,000 vulnerabilities on my network, all that I'm saying is that I know that all you have to be able to do is establish a connection to any one of my machines and any one of these services, and you can walk right into it.
Is there a case to be made to say things are so screwed up and we're missing so much that perhaps leading with zero trust will help us mature and recognize these gaps that we have?
Yes.
And perhaps say we have too much crap on the network, and therefore we can never really tackle this problem. If we lead with zero trust, we can skim the junk off the top and really look at what matters.
So you can imagine how shocked Ron was when we were talking once, and I said that I was actually kind of thrilled with cloud computing. Because
it's true. I was shocked.
You could have pushed him.
And he did say it.
Yeah, you could push him over the feather. But see, the issue is when you start moving your stuff out into the cloud, it gives you an opportunity to refactor what you're doing and to rezone everything. So if I start taking stuff off my servers and throwing them out into AWS, if I'm smart enough to get my networking security people in front of the train to establish some policies for what kinds of, you know, what services and what ports are going to be configured on those AWS machines, and essentially use AWS as a configuration management tool, I can build a fairly nice set of enclaves that are running under policies that make sense for those enclaves and that can only talk to those enclaves, assuming that we trust the administrators at AWS and assuming we trust AWS to deliver on its promise that its in-host firewalls work correctly. So that's possible. So to your question, I think it's doable. If I was talking to somebody who said, we're building a whole new, you know, I'm a security person who's responsible for a hospital, and we're building a whole new network. And what we're going to do is we're going to build a new network where we're doing as close to zero trust as we can. And we're going to put devices in different zones that have different trust models. And we're going to design this all very carefully. And we're going to have, the key thing for me is strong standards. You have to have strong standards, and you have to have essentially a configuration management committee so that people aren't just assigning IP addresses and sticking things wherever they want to, right? So if somebody said, we're going to do this, and we're going to do this with discipline and organization, and we're going to, you know, approach this in an orderly fashion, I would say that it would be a great way of designing a greenfield environment. But if you've got an existing network, most of the people that I talk to, they've got existing networks with huge numbers of nodes on them, and essentially they have to pull the whole network apart and put it back together differently in order to build a zone model. That's already difficult.
Yeah, I would say that it's definitely doable, a great opportunity. I think the rules would still apply. For the new zero trust green field, you have to, right, verify, use list privilege, assume breach. You also have to have, as we mentioned before, a good asset management system, right? You need to have, Marcus, the vulnerabilities properly managed, right? You need to have all of that stuff from the beginning with discipline, Marcus's word. And it has to be the new clean network.
Yeah.
That becomes the new clean network, and everything you already have is now the dirty network, and you have to have discipline not to allow for convenience, expediency, business demand, right? Punching holes in or not really taking that zero trust, you know, we'll work on that later, allowing, you know, to the dirty network to basically leak into the new clean zero trust network. Because look, it's the weakest link. It is, right? Those large companies that have done a great job implementing zero trust, do they no longer rely on DNS? Do they, right? Do they no longer get patches from third parties, right? It's always the weakest link. It always has been, right? Leverage is in the interface. Zero trust doesn't change that.
Excellent points. So I don't know that we answered any one particular question 100%. I think was the point for this. My goal really was to get people to think, right? So there's no such thing as 100% security, clearly no such thing as 100% zero trust. Not now, perhaps not ever, but perhaps some ways about thinking and approaching the way you run your security program, you can certainly leverage.
Yeah, I think that's really the issue. There's no such thing as a free lunch here. And the cost of the lunch to me is dominated by management costs. Just having human beings who understand security and who manage security. And that's really the pain point. So for any kind of a zero trust software system that's going to magically manage this for me, it's either going to still have that management cost, or it's going to have to somehow get around that management cost by making a whole lot of assumptions that I probably don't agree with. But, you know, that's okay. I think that's really my concern, though, is I think a lot of organizations that start off doing zero trust are going to wind up with wide open networks. You know, the old thing that Bill Cheswick used to call a crunchy shell around a soft, chewy inside. And, you know, the most of the networks that I still see are a soft, chewy shell around a soft, chewy inside.
It is an interesting question. How do you balance a managed risk philosophy and environment with the requirement in zero trust of absolute zero trust? Because I don't think they work together.
It's almost right? zero
risk. How can
risk.
You accept risk? Yeah, how can you accept risk that you're not zero trust in an environment that requires zero trust?
I think that that's inevitable, too. In order, you'd have to be able to solve that problem. And the way I would say you could solve it, or the closest thing, is basically, I don't want to advocate this, but it's basically vulnerability management. Is you would say, sure, we have all these things in a VM rack, and we accept the fact that that might actually not be able to enforce separation the way that we think it is. So we're going to have to do vulnerability management on the host software to make sure that the rack has the integrity that the rest of the systems in the rack are assuming that they have. Which means, again, you're back to vulnerability management. As soon as you hear that there's a new hole in whatever it is, you're going to do something. But that's what really strikes at the heart of this whole trust question, which is, you know, when Cisco has a problem with one of their devices, I can't fix it. All I can do is throw some firewall rules in my perimeter firewalls to protect my switch that now I discover has a vulnerability that was built into it for some government agency or something like that. So we're still stuck constantly chasing the vulnerability eight ball. And I don't think that's not a winning game, but you can't quit and you can't win. And you can't catch chips. And your ankle is chained to the table. I mean, that's basically what we're talking about. If you want to do computing, you're going to be stuck with this problem. And that's really why I offered to have this conversation and kind of trash the idea of zero trust, because in my many years working in security, I have seen many vendors come and offer a single point solution that's just going to solve all these problems. And,
For a nominal fee.
Yeah. But, you know, we haven't even talked about the question of devices, right? What if I have a network where I have some Cisco gear, I have some VM racks, and I've got a bunch of desktops running Linux and a bunch of desktops running Windows? Well, what about my Wi-Fi access points? How is my zero trust software going to help me with my Wi-Fi access points? Because those are, you know, some cheap stuff that I bought on Amazon or whatever. You can't fix those using software that you would install in the access point, because the manufacturers, the access points aren't going to give you that level of access. So you have to fix it in your control plane, which means you've just built a firewall that runs in a switch, which, you know, that's fine. You can use a Palo Alto or a Fortinet or any of these firewalls that operate like a firewall/switch device. And that's really what I think kind of winds up happening. You know, you've got a kind of a dynamic control plane on top of your firewall. Well, that's okay. I mean, Checkpoint basically had a version of that, which was permit outbound in firewall one in the first version, which was what, 1995 or something like that, 1994. That's how they won the market, was by making it very easy for traffic to work without a security practitioner having to get involved and make a decision about whether the traffic should work. And that the fact that they became the market leader by having that feature tells me everything I think we need to know.
Yeah, I definitely am still a curmudgeon in training. For me, zero trust, I think the first thing is, when you're having a conversation, is to understand what the definition of zero trust is for that conversation. I think the fundamental assertion is great, but seems really, really hard. Maybe impossible, but really, really hard. I think that most people who say they want zero trust really don't want zero trust. They want something else. We've talked a lot about that today. Segmentation, easy segmentation, whatever. And lastly, for me, it's the weakest link that's going to get you. And you should look for the missing link, you know, for the weakest links.
Right. And right.
They're a secure business with no risk, but so you work toward that. You don't arrive there.
Well, right now, the weakest link everywhere is the software distribution and software update models. I don't, well, Ron might not agree with me about that, but that seems to me to be the weak link. And, you know, I very cleverly arranged for the government to face plant its entire security framework this last week by uh, by relying on a software distribution model. So that was kind of timely. I hope they're not mad at me for that.
I'm sure there's somebody saying your name somewhere.
Well, the whole thing that happened that made the SolarWinds FireEye thing so deadly was it was a fairly simple update attack, but there was some transitive trust involved as well. And security systems right now, all the stuff that everybody has, just don't handle transitive trust attacks at all. In fact, most people are lucky if they can even detect a transitive trust attack. Right? It took FireEye basically stumbling over the fact that they had been attacked with a transitive trust attack for that whole piece of news to break. So until we get to the point where we're not just hanging open on transitive trust through the software update model, a lot of this stuff is really academic. And again, I'll plug the Huawei Snowden book. When I read that, I thought, man, I should just retire out of the security field. It's game over, man. I was like Private Hudson for a couple of days.
I remember you mentioning that in our last conversation, and I'll include the link to that in the notes for this episode. And I'm sure we can keep unraveling this bit, but we're nearly an hour in. I think I'm going to let it sit here, let people ruminate on this. Clearly we need to do better. Clearly zero trust may help some do better. Using it as a magic bullet, I don't think is the answer. That's my view of this conversation. But hopefully everybody's thinking, right? Take from this what you need to incrementally make your program better. And don't get caught in any traps that take you away from reaching that goal.
I'm really grateful that you let us have this conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's fun. Always. My
pleasure. Thank you both.
Nintex is the global standard for business process management and automation. The Nintex platform helps their clients accelerate progress on their digital transformation journeys by quickly and easily managing, automating, and optimizing business processes. Learn more at nintex.com. Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at imperva.com. We hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you learned something new and this story made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.